The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
How are you, sir?
This is Pierre.
Oh.
I can't believe I'm talking to you. Dr. Ray the Great.
Well, I don't know about that.
I love listening to you. You have a personality just like my father.
I don't think you should feel helpless. You are helpless.
Doctor, I really appreciate that. That makes me feel a lot better.
You be at peace, or else I'm going to yell at you.
Trying to find a reason to speak to you. I think you're the best thing since sliced bread.
That Ray, he's something.
Thank you so much for what you're doing for all the parents out there.
I don't know what I can possibly do.
I don't either.
I'm getting my money worth, I think, at this phone call.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
My version of the 1990s sitcom, Everybody Loves Raymond. This is the EWTN Catholic media version. Some people sort of tolerate Raymond. I am Raymond Guarendi, psychologist here. This co-production of EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network and Ave Maria Radio Communications. This is E-Person Monday. I had to find a way to somehow address, I was going to say tackle, but that's, you get in trouble for using that kind of manly language. Address the e-persons that come in regularly. Many. Some of them I can give a quick answer to the folks. I try to answer almost every single one in some way. Obviously, perhaps not the lengthy responses that people would like. Obviously, I can't do that, but I oftentimes invite them to call the show, and I would say 20% will call the show. I don't know why the others don't. Some of them come from the TV show, and they may not be aware there is a radio show. That's happened. People say, call what show? The TV show? I say, no, the radio show. What radio show? And that's my relatives. So we'll get to those. This something I do about once a year. This is God and St. Francis having a conversation. God says, St. Francis, you know about gardens and nature. What in the world is going on down there in the U.S.? What happened to the dandelions, violets, thistle, and stuff I started eons ago? I had a perfect, no-maintenance garden plan. Those plants grow in any kind of soil. They withstand drought, and they multiply with abandon. The nectar from the blossoms attracts butterflies, honeybees, and flocks of songbirds. I expected to see a vast garden of colors by now, but all I see are these green rectangles. It's the tribes that settled there, Lord. The suburbanites. They started calling your flowers weeds and went to great lengths to kill them and replace them with grass. Grass. But that's so boring. It's not colorful. It doesn't attract butterflies, birds, and bees. Only grubs and sodworms. It's temperamental with temperatures. Do these suburbanites really want all that grass growing there? Apparently so, Lord. They go to great pains to grow it and keep it green. They begin each spring by fertilizing the grass and poisoning any other plant that crops up there. Well, Francis, the spring rains and warm weather probably make the grass grow really fast. That must make the suburbanites happy. Again, Lord, apparently not. As soon as it grows a little, they cut it. Sometimes twice a week. They cut it. Do they bale it like hay? Not exactly. They rake it up and put it in bags. They bag it. Is it a cash crop? Do they sell it? No, sir, just the opposite. They pay to throw it away. Let me see if I got this straight, Francis. They fertilize the grass so it will grow. And then when it does grow, they cut it off and they pay to throw it away. Is that it? Yes, sir. Well, these suburbanites must be relieved in the summer when we cut back in the rain, turn up the heat. That surely slows the growth and saves them a lot of work, right? You aren't going to believe this, Lord. When the grass stops growing so fast, they drag out hoses. And they pay more money to water it so they can continue to mow it and then pay to get rid of it. What? Well, at least they kept some of the trees, huh? That was a stroke of genius on my part, if I say so myself. The trees grow leaves in the spring to provide beauty and shade in the summer. In the fall, they fall to the ground. They form a natural blanket to keep moisture in the soil and protect the trees and bushes. Plus, as they rot, they form compost to enhance the soil. It's a natural cycle of life. You might want to sit down, Lord. The suburbanites have developed a new cycle. As soon as the leaves fall, they rake them into big piles. And then they pay to have them hauled away. No. What do they do to protect the shrub and the tree roots in the winter and keep the soil moist and loose? Well, after throwing away the leaves, they go out and they buy something they call mulch. They haul it home and they spread it around in place of the leaves. And where do they get this mulch, Francis? They cut down trees and grind them up to make mulch. Enough. I don't think I want to hear this anymore. Had it all planned. The suburbanites changed it all. I get a lot of people who say, "Where'd you get that? I need it. I need it." I don't really know. I think if you want it, you're going to have to search it. St. Francis and God, lawn care, something along those lines, I would think. I'll give you just a couple little more thoughts here, and then we'll take a break and then hit the e-persons. If you know someone who doesn't apologize, and you think they don't because they always think they're right, or they always think they're superior, or they always think they know more, you're probably wrong. There's an inverse relationship. The less someone is willing to apologize, even when they do something wrong, or inept, or incompetent, or mean-spirited, or whatever, something negative, the less they're willing to apologize for doing something negative, the more likely they're insecure. They feel inferior, not superior. An apology means too much to them. Instead of simply meaning, at that time and place, I was wrong, it means I'm a loser. It means I'll be admitting you're always right. It means my personality can't take it if I acknowledge deficiencies. It means too much. The apology has too much personal meaning for them. Therefore, it's very, very hard for them to say, "I was wrong. I apologize." It's not a matter of feeling superior. It's more often a matter of feeling inferior. All right, Eric, take me through to the break. When we come back, we will jump on the e-persons. Violent.
All the advice, none of the bills. Come in. The doctor is in.
Brought to you by the nonprofit Seton Home Study.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray Guarendi here. You thinking about homeschooling? Seton Homeschooling. 40 years of experience. 17,000 current students. Pre-K through high school. They provide the books, the lesson plan, the counselors, the grading services, the tests. That's right. Pretty much everything. My wife and I use Seton. Some of our children. Tell you this. Two of them got perfect ACT scores in verbal. And overall, the Seton students scored more than 100 points above average on the SAT. Over 30% higher on English and reading on the ACT. It's a rigorous program. You want to give the very best to your kids? Trust me on this one. Go with Seton. It is a beautifully rigorous academic program. Go to SetonHome.org. That is SetonHome.org.
The following program is brought to you in part by MyCatholicWill.com. Surveys show that more than half of Americans do not have a will. At MyCatholicWill.com, it takes as little as 15 minutes to write your will and secure a legacy of faith. MyCatholicWill.com is the exclusive online destination for creating a Catholic will. The process of writing a will is simple and now more accessible than ever. MyCatholicWill.com, a legacy of faith for those you love.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically own shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Very nice to have you with me here on The Doctor Is In, Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time. My Instagram is something that my son runs, and we try to put up 30 to 45 second reels on life, on faith, on navigating through your own struggles or fears, trying to put up some stuff that's just helpful bite size suggestions and ideas that may be useful to you. Dr. Ray, my family and I, wife and two adopted daughters, just recently attended my niece's wedding and reception, which we were reluctant to attend. Because my oldest daughter, 18, was not invited to the bridal shower. Some background, Dr. Ray. My daughter, age 18 again, is diagnosed ADHD as well as on the spectrum for autism and has been struggling since she turned 13. It's gotten increasingly worse to the point where we had placed her into a residential treatment facility. What led to this placement was suicidal threats, self-harm, and many poor choices. Prior to the placement, she had been in and out of mental health hospitals as well as a local children's psych hospital. We could no longer take care of her needs, and we're fearful that without a higher level of care not available, this was not going to end well. So for 10 months, she was in an environment that specializes in dialectical behavior therapy. It's basically better thinking and behaving. We were hopeful that she would embrace the program and gain some skills for navigating life. Unfortunately, this didn't go as planned. And 10 days after her 18th birthday, she left the program and wound up on the streets. I should mention that we live in, and he mentioned where it was, so it's quite a distance to where she was living on the streets. I flew out to get her. Our initial goal was to get her back into the program, but because she's 18, we could no longer have a say in what we think is best for her, and she can do what she pleases, so she flat out refused to go back to that program. We managed to get her back to our city with hopes that we could get her into service programs locally, but we weren't successful. She refused to come home because she didn't want to follow our rules, which left her homeless on the streets. I cannot begin to tell you how much this hurts, even to write it. It was such a helpless feeling, not knowing if your child is even alive. We got her a phone and asked that she check in with us at night and in the morning, which she agreed, but she wasn't always good about it. This would leave my wife and I panicking. Through all of this, I prayed the rosary. At one point, I had opened up to our parish priest, who he and I met at a mental health hospital that she had checked herself into, and we prayed together. She was on the streets for about 3 months, and the worst things imaginable happened in that time. And I'm not going to say what they are, but he goes on, and yes, they were all very, very bad. Finally, my wife was able to get her home. I can't begin to imagine the trauma she endured, and she has yet to talk about any of it. We've been through hell, and I was just happy to have my daughter back and keep her safe. I should mention that my brother, sister-in-law, and niece, now these are the people that did not invite her to the wedding shower, were aware of her being on the street and know that she has mental health challenges. I later learned that our daughter tried to contact the niece, and the niece never replied to her messages. Okay, before I go to his immediate question, I want to make several comments here. Adopted daughter, and this craziness hit when she was about 13. Sadly, adopted children very often have turbulent womb environments, drugs, alcohol bathing their brain, or they have neglect in the womb, poor care, or they are in the custody of a very irresponsible, hurting parent, and ultimately the children's services steps in. So I don't know the history of this young lady, but it doesn't surprise me that she's been diagnosed with a brain that doesn't work nicely, smoothly. Her judgment is very poor. She would rather be homeless on the streets than to live at her parents' home. Even though all these terrible things happened to her and her life was, in essence, at risk, high risk. And this is hard for somebody to understand. How could she prefer that over a safe haven like our house with love? How is this? I can't fathom this. If the brain worked well, she probably would choose the safe haven. But because it doesn't, because it doesn't anticipate consequences, because it just wants autonomy, whatever that might mean, and whatever bad stuff comes with it, she chooses that. I struggle with this because I'm not making excuses for what she did. I'm trying to make it understandable. In all likelihood, she doesn't at all think normally. That, coupled with the fact that homelessness, street culture, all of that is now very available, as opposed to 200 years ago when it really wasn't anywhere near as available. Drugs and alcohol available. So given all that, it's a real brew. You have a likely brain damaged young adult who totally wants to be free of any constrictions as she sees it, who, when she makes terrible choices, still accepts the results of those choices because she doesn't want to be told what to do or how to do it or to be guided. Not unusual. A higher percentage of adopted kids, especially those with turbulent histories, do these kinds of things as young adults. Now, the reason he called, or the reason he wrote: we received a bridal shower invitation in the mail. To my surprise, my daughter's name was not on the invitation. I gasped when I saw it because my immediate feeling was that it was as if she was dead to them. I don't know if I'd go that far. I'd probably say that they didn't want her there at this gathering, a smaller gathering than the reception. I called my brother, asked him about it, and we had a heated exchange. He yelled at me saying, and he put this in caps, because we don't want her there, which is what I said before I read this. Needless to say, my wife and daughters, so they have other daughters. Oh, the two daughters, yeah, okay. Did not attend the shower. My sister-in-law did later call to apologize. Well, then he says, but the damage was done. No, the damage wasn't done. She called to apologize. They had second thoughts about it. I think that was a nice gesture on her part. I don't totally not understand why they would do this. They're aware of this daughter's history. They're aware of pathology that they can't comprehend. They probably don't have anyone in their lives who has conducted their life and experienced what your daughter has experienced. So therefore, they don't know how to interpret it. They're scared of it. I understand that. They don't know exactly what she would do, and even if she wouldn't erupt or cause any kind of overt conflict, they don't know exactly what she'd talk about. I can understand that. The heroically charitable thing to do would have been to say, okay, we're going to invite her. Let's see what happens. But they couldn't do that. And maybe to expect them to do that, to take it personal that they didn't, rather than saying, they don't know what to do about this. This is the most disturbed human being they know of, and they're not sure on their daughter's shower, which is probably a smaller group of 30, 40, 50, 60 people, they're not sure exactly what she would bring. As you can imagine, Dr. Ray, this drove a wedge between us, and we used to be very close. This is the old, we're very close, but then there's a relationship-breaking event. My brother was my daughter's confirmation sponsor. We did get a wedding invitation. We were all invited. We went. I didn't interact with my brother, sister-in-law, or the bride and groom before or after the ceremony. Oh, come on. Don't do that. Don't do that. At least try to understand where they're coming from, even if you don't agree with it at all. My daughter at one point ran over to her uncle, gave her a hug, and he coldly said hi. She's not aware that she wasn't invited to the family. At the end of the reception, I attempted to talk to my brother, but I didn't want to do or say anything that would ruin their special day. It didn't go well. He asked, what do you want from me? I told him I want his support. Give your niece a hug. Oh, boy. I'm going to say just a little bit more after this, after the break, but the bottom line is going to be this. You got to kind of understand where they're coming from, even if you don't agree with it and even if you don't like it. This is Dr. Ray.
Catholic. Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
Suffering in the world, personal suffering. One of the biggest things that keeps people from really giving themselves over to the Lord or joining an organized religion. Suffering doesn't seem to make sense. Why do children suffer? Why are there wars? Why is there persecution? Why are some people poor, others rich? Why is there such an imbalance? And on and on and on. A loving God wouldn't do that. Well, God doesn't do that. First of all, we did it to ourselves because in the beginning, right, we chose incorrectly. And then sin came into the world. It was not supposed to be like this, but God gives us free will. He does not want to force himself on us because otherwise we would be puppets. But how many of us can look back and forget what came out of a particular hard time? You don't learn really good, strong lessons when everything is going great.
Catholic Connections, Teresa Tomeo. Weekdays, 9 a.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
We just did our parish mission a couple weeks ago now, and I suggested that in the course of the mission that we do something like a little mini spiritual assessment of our lives. I don't have to show this to anybody, but a great chance for us just to, with real honesty, just between us and Jesus, ask ourselves some questions. First question, given the fact that half of Catholics don't think God is even personal, would be to ask ourselves that. Do I think God is personal? And then to ask myself, do I think a relationship with Jesus is possible? Do I have a relationship with Jesus? And if so, what's it look like? And then perhaps a little bit more awkwardly or painfully, to ask Jesus, from his perspective, what's the friendship that we have with him look like? How would he describe our friendship with him? That might be a hard conversation to have.
Thank you for joining me. It's Dr. Ray Garetti, program Doctors In. It's E-Person Monday, and I've just rather gone through a lengthy email. The upshot is this, that the daughter who's had major, major life problems, you name it, the pathology, 18 on the streets and all of the risks and awful stuff that brings. She wasn't invited to her uncle's, our writer's brother's daughter's wedding shower. They didn't want her there. Okay. Didn't trust her. Or they just, who knows? I'm sure they're aware of the long, long history of this young lady. She's had years of in and out of psychiatric facilities and group homes and you name it. So they're probably scared of her or scared of what she might talk about is probably the main thing. So they didn't invite her. And then at the wedding, the parents went and the daughter went. They were invited to that. And there was a coldness. Our writer said he didn't talk to his brother. Brother said, what do you want from me? Okay. Next day we got home. I texted my brother and sister-in-law congratulating them and wishing the bride and groom all the best. My sister-in-law texts back calling me a coward for not saying that to her face. In other words, probably what she wanted was acknowledgement that you were there and you were congratulating them. So you got two sides of this. Both people taking things personally. On one hand, you're taking it personally that they didn't want your daughter there instead of looking at it and saying, okay, I don't agree with the way they're looking at this, but I can understand why they would do this. They, on the other hand, are saying, well, I don't agree that you didn't talk to us, but I can understand that you're mad at us. But see, we don't do that. We don't put ourselves in the other person's shoes and say, okay, I think what they did was wrong, but people do wrong things. My wife addressed it. We should talk. And the wedding is not the place to do it. If you would like to talk, let us know. We have not heard from them. I think you haven't because they know you don't agree at all with what they did. At all. I think the best thing to do is apologize. Simply say, I'm sorry for getting so upset. I realize now that... please tell us what it was about the situation that you didn't want her there. And we will accept that. Certainly. We won't argue with you. We won't say, how could you think that way? No. Just tell us so that we know in the future for other times and places. Hat in the hand. That's always good to do. You said you were very close to your brother. You don't want something like this wrecking a family relationship? Oh, please, no. Then he closes with this. I don't want to lose my brother or his family, but I am appalled by their actions. I'm not appalled by their actions. I understand their actions. I'm not saying I would do that. And maybe most people wouldn't do that. Maybe most people would have a soft heart for your daughter. I think that's probably where you're coming from with this. You know how much your daughter has suffered. You know that. And you wish that they would understand that and at least have some kind of sensitivity to it. They don't, at least not now. Maybe they will. But I can guarantee you one thing for sure. They never will if you allow this to create that kind of distance between you. People are always going to do all kinds of stuff that we don't agree with or we don't like or we think is wrong or maybe we think is terrible. But if they're family, which is a certain special connection there, you do your best to overcome it, overlook it, get past it, and recognize, yeah, I think what they did was wrong, and they don't think what they did was wrong, so I'm really not going to get an apology. Because they didn't think they did anything wrong. All right. So what will you do from your end? Let's see where we're going to go here. I want to find that one. I'm wondering if you could give me some words of wisdom. Well, right away, quick, it starts out with a challenging question. My parents raised my siblings and I Catholic, but most of my siblings have fallen away. I'm 26, and this is a female, living with my parents and still trying to live a faithful Catholic life. Now, my 15-year-old niece wants us to call her he. And had her birth certificate changed. I recently referred to her as she, which resulted, here we go, again, here's somebody going, you're not doing what I want you to do, and therefore I'm going to write you off. Oh, man, what is this? Have we just gotten prickly as a society? Are we so spoiled in the way that we want things to go that if somebody isn't going to act exactly the way I want them to act, I'm going to take my ball and go home? Excuse me. That wasn't very mature. I recently referred to her as she, which resulted in my brother, her dad, telling me they won't bother to visit if I'm going to insist on saying that. When I called to talk to him about this, he said the reason was that my niece feels like she is in agony. Agony, when called by the wrong pronoun. All right. When people call her she. I live with my parents. They are upset at me for supposedly not keeping the peace because now my brother won't visit them. They want me to call my niece by her new chosen name and avoid pronouns altogether. But to me, that seems dishonest and like we're going along with my brother's bullying tactics. Do you have any advice? I realize I can't change my brother's mind, but it deeply hurts my parents, who are practicing Catholics, who seem to think I'm the one causing the problem, rather than my brother, who is threatening not to see us if we refuse to go along with this. This is a conflict many have. They look at someone and say, but you're not a he, you're a she. Biologically, the trillions of cells in your body are XX. You can't deny that. You want me to deny it. I don't want to deny it. I probably would call her, he, I, is it a she? Hold on a second. Okay. She is now wanting to be called a he. I probably would call her by her new name, if that's what she wishes. And you can avoid the pronouns. I would ask your parents, why are you blaming me? And they will say this, because you just need to do this to keep the peace. That's all. Got a few more comments on the other side about this.
"60 Seconds with Father Mitch Pacwa."
Buddhism itself has a lot of different forms. There's no one type of Buddhism. When you get to Buddha himself, he was a complete agnostic and supposed to have been a very wealthy prince who had everything, but found that this was all hollow and empty, especially in the face of death. What he came up with as a basic principle is that the source of all suffering in life is having desires. So you need to free yourself of all desires, and then you won't suffer in this life anymore. This would be very different from Christianity, where we don't want to give up our desire for God. First, we do believe that there is one God. Second, we do believe that it's three persons in one God. And thirdly, that the goal of life is not emptiness, but is union with God and through Jesus Christ. That's the way of salvation.
The people you know and trust are on EWTN.
What is Jesus Christ's relationship to the church he founded? According to the Catholic Catechism, whether the head or the members of the church speak, it is Christ who speaks in his role as the head and in his role as the body. As head, Christ calls himself the bridegroom. As body, he calls himself the bride. In the gospel, Jesus says, "So they are no longer two, but one flesh." This great mystery of conjugal union, where two different persons become one, is applied to Christ and the Church. The Catechism says further, the Church is the temple of the Holy Spirit. St. Augustine said, "What the soul is to the human body, the Holy Spirit is to the body of Christ, which is the Church." The Holy Spirit makes the Church the temple of the living God. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism. Please visit us at our website, www.maltausa.org.
The thoughts, opinions, and semi-useful life nuggets offered on The Doctor Is In may sound like bits of spontaneous insight. They are, however, the product of a group of very smart people working behind the scenes to put answers on a radio teleprompter for each question received. Should the imprompter glitch, I will stammer, stumble, and sound semi-literate in my responses. Hopefully, no one will notice. It's not one of these family situations where a person is not going to do what the other person wants. The other person says, "If you're not going to do what I want, I'm not going to talk to you anymore." Man, oh man, oh man. 26-year-old female living with her parents tries to practice her faith. All the siblings have fallen away. This kind of explains why her brother, who probably doesn't have much attachment to the faith anymore, is upset at her because she's not recognizing that the 15-year-old niece now wants to be called he, had changed her birth certificate, and has a new name. Well, our writer referred to her as a she, and her uncle essentially said they're not going to visit if I'm not going to call her what she wants. I asked about it. He said she feels like she is in agony when people call her a she. Okay, that's a strong word. My parents are upset at me for not keeping the peace because my brother won't visit them. They want me to avoid the pronouns, call her by her new name. I don't want to do it. It seems like a lie. But I don't want to get my parents in the middle of this. That's the recap. Well, You realize if you're not going to do this, then your brother's not going to come and your parents are going to blame you. So that's the price of choosing that direction. If you say, I'll call her by her new name, and perhaps at some point she'll realize, okay, this was a phase. This is so now becoming common among adolescent girls. Gender identity issues used to be predominantly boys, and they were based neurologically, hormonally. Not now. They're just based now on a change in perception. So call your brother. Say, okay, don't do this to mom and dad. If you're going to blame everybody, anybody, blame me. And if you say, I'm not going to do that, it seems dishonest, then you can say to your brother, call mom and dad if you're going to come over, and I'll make sure I'm not here, and I'll leave. I'll go somewhere, and then I won't come back until you're done with your visit. I don't want to be a wedge between you and mom and dad. You could do that if you choose to say, all right, enough. So many people are now put in this. They're told, you need to say this is what I am. You know the irony to this? What if I say to them, I want you to call me Lord Ray? And they won't. Why not? I want that. That's my new appellation. I want Lord Ray. Who are you to say, no, you're not going to do that? Or if I say to them, I want them to recognize me as a 30-year-old. Ray, you're not a 30-year-old. Right. But I'm also not a female. And if I say my perception of me as a female, how is that all that different from saying my perception of me as a 30-year-old? They're both perceptions of my body. If I'm anorexic and my perception of me is that I'm fat, even though I'm nowhere near fat, I'm dangerously skinny, we view that as something that needs therapy. We view that as a body delusion. So somehow, if she says, I'm a he, then you have to say, okay, you're a he. Obviously, this kind of reasoning doesn't fit. And I would suspect that brother has been told that if you don't go along with this 15-year-old's change, and hopefully she's, well, I don't know what kinds of, if you notice gender-affirming care rather than hormonal introductions, and perhaps even sex reassignment surgery, which more and more people are saying, uh-oh, what did I do? If he doesn't go along with this, I'm sure he's been told by people that your daughter's a high risk for suicide, especially when she is in agony if somebody uses the wrong pronoun. So given that, he figures that's it. I don't buy this God thing. I don't buy this church thing. I don't buy this male-female thing. And if she wants to be who she wants to be, then let her be. And my only answer to that is, okay, but then why can't I be who I want to be? Remember the woman who said she was black and she wasn't black? She got in all kinds of trouble. Oh my gosh, everything came down on her by saying this. Well, I don't know. Is that all that different? It's a bodily perception. I regard myself as black. But you're white. Yeah, but that it's irrelevant. It's what I want to see me as. Yeah, this is a real can of worms in a whole lot of ways, and nobody's really chasing the implications of all of this. Good luck to you, little sister. This is Dr. Ray.
Hello, Steve Ray here. Hard to believe it's already been 20 years of leading Catholic pilgrimages. So we're going to celebrate with a Danube River cruise. We've chartered our own ship. We'll share meals and enjoy good Catholic fellowship together. We hope you can join us next June through Budapest, Vienna, Salzburg, Prague, and a whole lot more. But sign up quick. It's already more than half full.
To learn more about your Ave Maria Radio trip, go to AveMariaRadio.net and find the pilgrimage link.
When your children consider going to college, where are you going to find a place that will prepare them for the future and build on the foundation that you've laid? The answer? Ave Maria University. With an authentically Catholic curriculum, including 35 majors, AMU prepares students to take on the world.
I've seen the difference in my son since he's been at Ave Maria. He's happy, he's excited about what he's going to do with his degree, and he's living his faith.
Learn more at avemaria.edu. That's avemaria.edu.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
I come from the other side of the tracks, see? My uncle used to have slot machines. Put one nickel in and it's emptied. Boom. And I brought him home in a bag, and my mother looked at me. Where did you get all that money? I said, I won them. You didn't win them. He fixed the machine. I didn't care if he fixed the machine or not, you know?
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Are you paying high prices with a traditional health insurance company that pays for things that violate your conscience? There's an alternative available. Solidarity HealthShare is a community of faithful individuals and families that never share into immoral medical services, all while saving you money with prices starting as low as $85 per month for singles and $512 for families. Never fund another abortion with your healthcare dollars. Call 844-313-4999 to learn more.
Thank you for joining me. This doctor is in. Eat Person Monday. Appreciate very much the company. Hi, Dr. Ray. Standard female appellation. My four-year-old daughter is our oldest. She's a rule follower as well as a rule tester. Okay, translation, rule follower and rule tester, a.k.a. four-year-old kid. We also have a three-year-old son, a 15-month-old daughter, and a baby girl due in November. Whoa! Four kids under four, or four and under. We have high expectations for our children, so I feel like I'm always disciplining someone. Okay, let me just stop right there. Often, when parents say, I feel like I'm always disciplining, they're not always disciplining. They're correcting. Or they're instructing with words, which is okay in its place if it works. But when a parent feels like they're always disciplining, it's often because they're not really disciplining. They're using words. You don't need to do that now. That's not appropriate. Stop that. No, leave him alone. He's not bothering you. He's allowed it. That kind of thing. That's not discipline. That's instruction. If you're going to discipline, there's a consequence to it. As a result, and this is, okay, this is why I think this confirms my speculation. As a result, our four-year-old has taken on my attitude and voice of authority with her younger sibs in trying to enforce the rules. There you go. So, wait a minute. She's using words to enforce the rules. Is that because she's hearing mom predominantly use words to enforce the rules? We regularly tell her she is not the parent and cannot use that tone. And then we offer her an alternative way to offer correction. Well, actually, she's not allowed to do that. So what are you going to do about it, Mom? To this, she will then stare in a different direction because she doesn't like to hear correction. Or she'll explain why she was right. What a bright little kid. She usually has a good reason and is genuinely trying to help. Yeah, that's good. Her motive is good. But she's still not permitted to do that. You cannot boss your little siblings around. I'm struggling to identify the correct way to discipline her. There's no real correct way, Mom. Discipline her. She's not allowed to boss a sibling around or to correct a sibling. She's not allowed. But they're wrong and she's trying to tell them. Yeah, but the problem is she's doing it all the time. We had siblings like that. My daughter thought she was totally the boss. She's now a JAG lawyer facing being a colonel in the Army. Okay, you see what'll happen? Watch it. I do need to know if someone is in danger or hurting themselves. But her discretion is not great about this. Well, she's four. And I also don't want to encourage her to be a tattletale by having her come to me anytime anything's bothering her. So how do I discipline so she stops her false authority tone but continues to try and encourage rule following within the household? I don't think you have to worry about that. I don't think you have to separate it out. The bottom line is she's not allowed to correct her siblings. That's your job. But Dr. Ray, but it's helpful if she does that. If she would do it with discretion, it is. But she's not doing it with discretion. She's just doing it. I'm the boss. I'm four. Here's a kind of creative way to get her to stop. You tell her that if you tell me or if I hear you correcting them for something, I'm assuming this is going to be the three-year-old, all right, three-year-old brother. I mean, four-year-old girls are really good at bossing around little brothers. That's like their natural role. You tell her that if I see you doing this, if I hear you doing this, I'm going to make your brother sit if he did something wrong. And you're going to sit for the exact same amount of time. And she'll stare off like, I didn't hear you. Okay, I'm not listening. That's okay. You don't have to worry about that. You don't have to say, did you hear me? You don't have to say, look at me. No, because your actions are going to do your talking the next time this happens. She's not dumb. She's going to realize, wait a minute. I don't want to boss them around. I don't want to be mom here because all that's happening is I'm getting the same stuff they're getting. I recall one of your talks, you mentioned that with your own children, you didn't need to discipline less but love more. Yeah, you're taking that out of context. We had four-year-old twins we adopted who were getting their lion's share of the discipline. And when I said maybe we should tone it down, drop our standards, my wife said, no, we'll give them more affection than we normally would give. We affection people here, but we're not going to discipline less, okay? Mom says, I don't know how to give her more attention without neglecting the other children. No, you don't have to give her more attention, Mom. It has nothing to do with it. We believe her love language is quality time. Oh, yeah, you give her the time you can, but you got four little ones. I said that to my wife one time. I said, you know what? We got all these little ones. I can't give them each individual time. She goes, Ray, that's why they got brothers and sisters. Our budget's tight. Getting an occasional babysitter, taking just her out is not an option. We don't want to regularly single her out. Yeah, you don't have to do that, Ma. Your loving parenthood is plenty. She lives in a very secure, giving home with all kinds of goodies that most people and four-year-olds in human history never came close to having. It's not a matter of lack of attention. It's just a matter of she thinks at age four, which is fairly understandable, that she's the boss. Okay, you can think it, but I'm not going to let you do it. And you'll find out that you'll have to curtail that.
But Dr. Ray, she's not learning anything. She's simply stopping doing it.
Right. That's learning something. I don't do a lot of things that I know are stupid. Why? Because consequences happen. I don't want the consequences. That's learning. I don't know where we got this. Well, she needs to internalize that she's not the boss. Well, she will, as you teach her she's not the boss. She'll be forced to come to the conclusion, I'm not the boss. And I suspect here, Mom, that she gets a little delight out of lording it over her brother in particular. The 1.5-year-old doesn't know what's going on half the time, 3/4 of the time. Probably the brother doesn't either. All he knows is that she's gonna either tattle on him or yank him around or correct him or go over and grab something because you're not allowed to have those blocks. Put those away. You need to put those away right now. Wait a minute. I know what my wife would do. My wife would hear something like that. She'd say, ooh, you're bossing your little brother around. gosh, you're going to put those away now. That's all. You just teach her. Not a matter of attention. It's a matter of, you can't do that. Well, I got to go. Enjoyable spending time with you. Appreciate your company so very, very much. Walk with God. That's good attention there. Walking with God is great attention. And you know what? You want him to be the boss of you. I think that's healthy. I think that's really healthy. You want somebody that's perfect and loving and just to be the boss of you.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRRay.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.